you, dear.
Hi, everybody. My name's Leo, and I'm an alcoholic. And out of great sympathy for you, because I see some of you sitting on the floor, and some of you squashed at the back. It's no problem for me to talk for you for 50 minutes or so, which is the normal time for a speaker. But I knew you didn't want me to speak for 1.5 hours. That would be quite ridiculous, even for all of you. Let me just say right at the very beginning that it is a great joy and privilege to be here and to come up from Long Beach. And just for you to know, if you don't see me tomorrow, it's because this evening I have to go to Las Vegas. And I can see already some of you are terribly saddened and depressed at the very thought of me going off there. Somebody in the hotel came and said, oh, she said, yes, she had a smile on her. Oh, she said, it's good to see you. She says, I've got your tapes. I got your books. She said, I can't tell you how pleased it is to be with you, Father Martin. just for you to know, in fact, a lot's happened to me this year. I hope a lot happened to you. For one thing, I celebrated last year, this year, on the 4th of July, but last 4th of July, I celebrated 22 years of recovery in this fellowship. Very powerful. Very good. Very good. And also, last year I became a citizen of the United States. I also had a colonoscopy. Just thought I'd share that with you. My whole life's changed. The physician said to me, he said, with a colonoscopy there's normally good news and bad news. The good news is they don't find anything. The bad news is you like it. I tell you, my whole life's changed. But by the way, laughter. We can be recovering. There's no reason why we shouldn't have a laugh. Am I right? Am I right? Yes, indeed. I think it was Saint Augustine. It was Saint Augustine who said that laughter is the language of God. And I know that we are on a spiritual program. And there is no aspect of spirituality in this program. It is spiritual. And I say this to you because it's not religious. Now, I happen to be an Episcopalian. I know, don't worry about it. I'll get over this. But I happen to be an Episcopalian. Some of you are Catholic, some of you are Baptist, some of you are on your journey. The reason I say that is, I am not here to talk about religion. Thank you, Mother. But I am here, and it will touch you, I'm sure, will touch on spirituality. Somebody in this program said that spirituality and religion is not the same. Religion is man-made, spirituality is God-given. Religion has divided people for too long. Spirituality teaches the world to hold hands. Believe you me, if the program of the 12 steps was practiced by all the countries and all the peoples of this world, it would be a more peaceful and a more benevolent country. Don't you agree? What a blessed world it would be. I'm so and so. I want to say that right at the beginning. Say that right at the beginning, and I want you to feel that tonight is a very, very special for me, because it's not very often I get out here, because I live in Long Beach. I mean, it's not like I come here just to have a little walk around and visit Target. So I get a chance to say hello to you. I'm very pleased to see that Bob Earle is speaking for you tomorrow. I've not seen Bob for a while, and it's lovely to see him here. And I know that he will give you a very powerful spiritual talk tomorrow. It's also nice for me to have seen people who have heard me speak at other places, and to come over and to say hello. It's just lovely, because it is a fellowship. You know, and somebody said to me, they said, are you nervous? Are you nervous when you come and talk to a group of people here? You're nervous in Victorville. I says, I'm not nervous. And they said, I said, no. Because nobody here has ever hurt me. Nobody here made my mother cry. Nobody here made my father bleed. That's why I fear you. There is one person in this room that I fear. His name is Leo. I don't know about you, but I've been the single biggest problem in my life. And by the way, if I've been the single biggest problem in my life, then I can be the single biggest solution in my life. And I say that to you because we just heard, beautifully read, the 12 steps. And it's the 12, and it's always steps. I always say to people, it's the 12 steps. 12 steps. Nobody ever says, Frank, will you come out and read the 12 stand stills? Nobody ever says that. Nobody, not in this film, nobody says it. Because we're not about standing still, we're about moving forward. And I say that especially because I saw people with their hands up. I saw people who are new people here. And I want to say to them, just like I want to say to those of us who have been around these rooms for a few years, we take steps to be a program of attraction. It's clearly said we're a program of attraction. It's not in our interest to be boring. I often say to my Episcopal congregation, are you happy? Are you happy? Episcopalians have to check with one another. They say, are we happy? Are we happy? Then somebody will say, yes, we're happy. I say, well, tell your face. Because your face doesn't know. Just take a minute, pop in the toilet and look in the mirror and say, I'm happy. Because your face doesn't know. So I say at this fellowship here, celebrating, what, the 16th? Sixteenth! Are you happy, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah. Because you don't realize, no, I'm serious. You don't realize this, but these things are taped. You don't realize that. And what happens is, people get these tapes, and they're sitting in the car. And they just heard you say yes. And if you've only got 6 months, if you've only got 1 year, and if you've got a little tape going on in your car, and you're feeling lonely, and you're feeling depressed, believe you me, what you just did makes a big difference to people. Because I don't know, I may be having my 23rd year this year, but I can tell you, it does not mean to say that we don't have bad days and bad weeks. Doesn't mean to say that sometimes life doesn't throw you a curve. It throws you a curve. Because me getting sober doesn't change how life deals with me. But my sobriety today does affect the way I deal with life. Amen. Oh, Lord. Hey, women, that's what I say. Hey, women. Let's have some for the hey, women. Hey, women. So and if you say to me, he seems excited, I am excited. I'm excited. Because I'm living the spiritual awakening. And I'll make sure if you're prowling about like the hordes of Midian, if you're prowling about outside there, I'll say hello to you. It's a program of attraction. And especially for young people, especially new in the program, they should see that spiritual awakening reflected in our lives. And that's very powerful. Now, by the way, you probably realize I'm not from Ohio. Not from Ohio. I'm from England. And by the way, I'm not the only drunk that came out of England, I'll tell you now. Some of you heard me say this before, but I'll say it again. We had a famous Prime Minister called Winston Churchill. Oh, yes. Winston Churchill, famous. He used to like to drink. He used to drink a bottle of brandy a day. That was just the brandy. One day he was sitting at dinner with Lady Astor, and Lady Astor turned to Winston Churchill and said, Winnie, you're drunk. And Winston Churchill, in his inimitable way, said, Madam, you are ugly. But I shall wake up sober in the morning. She was quick to say to him, she says, Winnie, if I was your wife, I'd put poison in your soup. Madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it. Now, some of you may be saying, what's all that about? It's the disease. The disease of alcoholism is cunning, baffling, powerful. It's also patient. It's a disease that makes, very often the alcoholic will make other members of the family feel that they're crazy. The other members, especially the Al-Anons, they go to the doctors long before we do. Don't you understand? You're the reason why I drink. You're the reason I throw up. And they believe it. They look in the mirror and they say, what am I doing wrong? Talking about Al-Anons. Any Al-Anons here? Don't be shy, you never used to be. A lovely story about an Al-Anon who had 7 years. How many years did she have?
Seven.
How many?
Seven.
She married badly. Oh no, she married badly. She married a very old-fashioned man. And on the wedding night, they went to the bedroom. And the husband, he took off his trousers and he threw his trousers in the middle of the bedroom. He says, wife, get into those trousers. She said, I can't get into those trousers. He says, no. And don't forget, who wears the trousers in this marriage? And he's old fashioned. But she had how many years in Al-Anon?
Yes.
How many?
Yes.
She did no more. She took off her panties. And she threw her panties in the middle of the bedroom. She says, husband, get into those panties. He says, I can't get into those panties. She says, no, and you won't until you change your attitude. Now, some of you may be thinking, hey, yep. Some of you may be thinking, What's panties got to do with spirituality? Everything. No, I'm serious. Because I'll tell you, today, you think about what I'm saying now. Today, some of us are saying yes, when for years we said no, and we're saying yes to ourselves. And maybe some of us today are saying no, to people who for years we said yes to. We've only just begun. This is an adventure. Recovery is an adventure. It's very, very powerful. And it's an adventure that has taken me to many, many parts of the world, not just the United States. I don't think I'm the only one. I don't think I'm the only one who would say this, but I can say this truthfully. People have asked me, what is the most important thing in your life? Your father, your mother, your priesthood? No. It's my sobriety. I say this right at the very beginning. Why do I say it? Because if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't have a mother. I wouldn't have a father, not a relationship. I wouldn't have a God, and I wouldn't have a priesthood. So for me, this whole program of what we're talking about tonight, you bet I'm excited. And for me to see, I went over to say hello to them, see some of the young children behaving so well, sitting here, listening. It's a very powerful program. And I've said that it's important to have this program practiced in all our affairs. And I hope you practice it in all your affairs. Last week I was with Father Martin, Father Joseph Martin. He's getting older now. Yeah, no, he is. And I sat at a booth with him. My name's Booth, and we sat at a booth. It was a booth. And he's sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and he reminded me the story of a guy who said to him, Father Martin, he said, I used to be a drunken thief. Now I'm a sober thief. Father Martin says, no, you cannot be a thief in this program. You practice the principles in all our affairs. So I say right at the top, this program, you cannot stay in this program and live this program and be a racist or a sexist. Cannot be in this program and put down other people because they're different from you. It's not about stealing. It's about being the best that you can be. You know because you know the steps as well as I do, and you're going to hear a lot about it during the marathons that are going on. But there is something promised to us, and that is a spiritual awakening. And by the way, the spiritual awakening isn't so much that you love God. I know a lot of drunks who love God. I know a lot of people who go to church every Sunday, they're still drunk. They read their Bibles, but they're still drunk. It's not about loving God. It's about beginning to love yourself. Once you start to love yourself, once you start to respect yourself, believe you me, you're going to make some great movements in this world. So for me to be here to share with you, there's a kind of a Hindu story that I sometimes share. It's Hindu. Get ready. It's Hindu. It's a story about a man who dies. And he's at the gates of heaven. He's knocking at the gates of heaven. And God says, who is it? And the man says, it's me. And God says, go away. Thanks. This is ridiculous. Here I am at the gates of heaven, I want to get in. He goes back. God says, who is it? He says, it's me, George. God says, go away, George. He thinks, this is ridiculous. Here I am at the gates of heaven. And then he remembers. He remembers what he heard in this program. And he goes back to the gates and he knocks on the gate. God says, "Who is it?" And the man says, "It's you." And God says, "Come in." Can you find something of God in your life? Can you find something of that miracle, that preciousness, that specialness in your life? Because if you can, believe you me, you'll shine. You'll be a walking program of attraction. You won't take yourself so seriously, because you realize that in life we have times when we are tested, and we have times when we have to face difficulties, and that's when this program really comes into place. So I'm going to share what we've been told in this program, and that is, say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And although I'm speaking to you, I want you to realize it's not my life, it's your life. You know, I've often said about this program, because people say to me, what do you think? It's so special. I mean, what do you think is so special about this program? And I say, you know, it's a bit like what the Jews have said to the world. The Jews say we're going to write about the Holocaust, we're going to speak about the Holocaust, we'll have meetings about the Holocaust, because if we don't, it might all come back. And there's a Holocaust of alcoholism. And you bet we write about it, we talk about it, we have meetings about it, we study the big book, the steps. Why? Because if we don't, it might all come back. Now this is not a meeting about relapse, but you know and I know that if you stray too far from this program, you're already in the process of relapse. I've met many people who've relapsed. Friends of mine who've relapsed. And you know, it's kind of like it started before they ever took the drink. They didn't need the meetings. They didn't need a sponsor. They didn't need to read the big book. And they didn't need to be at conventions like this. Now, I'm very conscious, because I go all over the United States. And I see a lot of AA conventions. And I can tell you that across the board, a lot of the enthusiasm for AA that we had 10, 15 years ago is beginning to wane. A lot of conventions that used to have 800 people are now pulling only 500. And why am I saying this to you? Because believe you me, we are the carriers of the message. And one of the ways we do that is by coming to conventions like this and supporting one another and giving one another ideas, because we carry this message. And alcoholism is claiming more lives today than it's ever done. More children, more families are suffering than it's ever done. And so support your local area. I say that to you. I heard in the announcements something about you having a meeting ready for next year. Get behind it. Support it. Where the hell would any of us be if somebody hadn't brought the message to us? It is the single most important program for alcoholics in the world. It can make the difference to their lives. So support it. Get behind it. And I'll tell you something, next year, you'll have an even bigger conference. We are the program of remembrance. And if we don't remember, it might all come back. Is that the Pope? Will you tell him we're in a meeting? Tell him we'll call him back. He's a nice fella. He'll understand. He's a nice man. He'll understand. So we're tied up. I'm going to do what it says. I'm going to do what it says, and that is talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And as I said to you earlier, I want you. You may think, oh, well, this is a priest or somebody in England, or no. This is the story of alcoholism. Joseph Campbell, you watch Joseph Campbell, many of you. Joseph Campbell on the PBS series talked about the power of myth. And basically what he said is there's really one essential myth. And that is how human beings cope with the challenges of life and how they overcome them. How they face that witch on the road. How they face their giant. And every human being at some level is facing similar things. And so although you think this is my story, believe you me, look to see what you have in common. Especially around the feelings. Now, this story, I'll tell you now, it's funny. Because I'm funny. No, I don't mean funny like joke funny, I mean I'm funny. You know, it's just funny things happen to me. You know, you travel with me, Ian's traveling with me, we're going to Vegas together. But funny things happen. Strange things happen. But all I'm trying to share with you, and I'm looking at some of you, and I think you're funny too, I'll be honest with you. I think some of you, I'm looking around, I think this is a funny group, I'll tell you. I started to drink when I was in England. And it was typical English, we call it a public school. Now what that means is, the public can't get in. It's true. It's called a public school, which means you pay. But I was in the school, and what they do in England, it's a boys' school. It's a boys' school in England. And what they used to do was to give you a beer to drink before you went to sleep. And it wasn't so much that I got drunk, and it wasn't so much that I liked the taste, but I liked how I felt when I drank. I'm going to say that I liked how I felt when I drank. There are many speakers who refer to the fact this is a disease of the feelings. I liked how I felt when I drank. I'm 5'7", 5'8" on a very good day. When I drank, I felt 6'2". I felt big. I had a stutter. We're talking a stutter. When I drank, the stutter went. The stutter went. I thought I'd found a friend. And nobody ever in England, 20 odd years ago, nobody ever referred to this as a drug. Everybody drank. Bishops drank. Prime ministers drank. It was part of to have arrived. I liked how I felt when I drank. And I thought that I had got a friend for the rest of my life. I didn't ever think of myself as like people who are sniffing stuff and putting things in. I'm drinking. My father drank, my sister drank, my aunts, everybody drank. I went through university, some of the best universities, and I was drinking. When I felt insecure, I thought the drinking would help me, make me feel secure, make me feel comfortable. I had found, here we go, a friend. Cunning. Baffling. Powerful. Patient. I graduated from some of the best universities, and just like you, I went to a church and I was let loose on a church. Let loose on a congregation. And I had to have a reason. I had to have a reason to get mixed in the bars. So I said to the other priests, the lost and the lonely, those sheep without a shepherd, they need me. And I know where they are. They're all in a bar. You walk into a bar dressed like this, people notice you. People say, look, there's a penguin at the end of the bar. A walking oil slicks just come in. And you know something? You know something? Everybody likes to talk to a priest. Even if they don't like you, they talk to you. People used to send me a drink. People used to say, give the priest at the bar a drink. Give him a double. Give him a triple. And then they'd come over, you know, they'd come over. Eventually they'd come over. They always come over. They just say, you're the kind of priest we like. Jesus sent you to us. Oh, yes. You drink like we drink. You smoke like we smoke. You talk like we talk. You throw up like we throw up. People started to come from the bar to my church. My church was full of drunks. Place was full of them. He was packed. Nobody knew what to expect. I didn't, and I was doing the service. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If you're a drunk and you drive a truck, there's going to be times you're drunk in your truck. If you're a drunk and you're a nurse, there's going to be times you're drunk in the hospital. If you're a drunk and you're a priest, there's going to be times you're drunk doing the services. No, that's just a fact. I remember once doing a funeral, drunk. I followed the coffin into the hole. Just went, followed it straight in the hole. Right? Dropped about 12 feet. But it was an Irish funeral. Nobody noticed. And somebody said, where's the priest? I tell you, it's a hell of a thing when you hear the amens coming from above. But they got me out. They just pulled me out. I was full of dirt. And we carried on. I'm serious. We just carried on. Somebody said, get the priest out of the hole. Get a stick. We can get him out. We just carried on. You want to know a funny thing in Victorville? On a Saturday night? Nobody talks about that unless I tell them. Do you know that? Nobody ever talked about it. I thought about this hard and long. If you want to know. You want to know why we're here? You want to know why we're in AA? Because it got out. It got out. We tried to contain it. But it got out. People started to talk. People we didn't want to talk started to talk. your father, your mother, your husband, your wife, your employer, people, it got out. As long as we have these stories, and you all have the stories. I've just shared with you, the only people who would ever talk or know about that was me, because I fell in the hole, and the family. Nobody said a thing. The word today is enabling. But I'm telling you, the reason why we're here, you and me, why we're here, is because it got out. As long as we contain. Do you remember? There's a lot of things in your story, and there's a lot of things in my story. Nobody knows. I'm speaking so I can tell you. I often peed in a corner. I peed thinking it was the toilet. I had a pee. What about those telephone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning to somebody you met in Mexico in Acapulco in 1978? Just thought I'd call and say hello. How are you doing? We did strange things. When we talk about the first step, cunning, baffling and powerful, we say we admit it. It's powerless. And our lives have become unmanageable. What do we mean? Powerless. It's a mess. That's what it is. A mess. And as long as nobody knew, it stayed a mess. I often think the people. We think about this now. I think I'm serious about this. The people who commit suicide, it never gets out. You can't do an intervention if you don't know. The guilt, the shame, the loneliness. Some people live their whole lives and they isolate, separate, create a wall, and they die. Now you and I don't know your story, but I know your story. I don't know your story, but I know your story. I know when I listen to every speaker at every big AA meeting, doesn't matter whether it's the old tapes of Chuck C, whether it's Clancy, whether it's Father, it doesn't matter who, Sister B, everyone hits the point when it got out. The disease got out. You couldn't contain it. People started to put pressure on you. That's why we're here. It's called a moment. How did it? No, nobody knows about that funeral except me and the family. But things were to escalate, you know, it gets worse, doesn't it? How did it get out? How did it get out? I was doing a baptism. I'm saying, it was big. People flew in. I'm saying it was big. Grandparents, people, it was big. People flew in. And I had been drinking. But I wasn't drunk. But I was mellow. You know what I mean? When you're mellow, you don't need any help. Give me the baby. Will you just give me the baby? I baptize the baby in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Daphne. I didn't ask anybody. The mother let loose such a scream. She said, "Father Leo, it's a little boy." Say, "I don't care what the hell it is. It's Daphne now." She said, "Is there anything we can do about it?" I said, "No." Forever and a day, he will be called Daphne. How do you make amends to a thing like that? But you know what she did? Now, hey, oi, oi, hell. You know what she did? She called the bishop. See, now it's getting out. Because a bishop's only an employer dressed in purple. Got to the bishop. Now, you must remember, I'd forgotten about this now. You know what I mean? About 2 days later, I get a telephone call from the bishop. Bishop of Chichester. He says, Booth? I says, yeah. He says, it's the bishop. I said, oh, hello? He said, I wanted to see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Put the phone down. I thought, why does the bishop want to see me? See, I'd forgotten about the baptism, because, you know, alcoholics, we move on. I mean, we don't stay stuck. It's a new day. I go to see the bishop, and he's got a letter. He says, I've got a letter. A letter. I said, good. He said, it's about you, you fool. Oh, you're a fool. He said, are you sick? Are you demented? Are you having a nervous breakdown? And then he looked at me straight in the eyes. Straight in the eyes. He was a small man. He looked at me straight in the eyes. And he said, and you've heard these words. You heard these words from your wife or your husband. You heard them from somebody. He looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, have you been drinking? Have you been drinking? Now see if you can identify with this. Who? Me? I swear on the Bible, no. But he didn't believe me. But he couldn't prove it. You know what I mean? But you're telling a lie and you know that they know and you know that they know that they know. Oh, but they can't prove it. Dear Bishop, I stopped drinking July 1977. I stopped. But this was like about 76. Now, this is 1976 in England. This is 1976 in England. He didn't tell me to go to AA. He didn't tell me to go to see a therapist. We had precious few treatment centres for alcoholics in England. Do you know what he said? He said, quit it! I said, what? He said, quit it! I said, quit it? He said, quit it! I said, you mean not just quit it? He said, quit it! I said, I'll quit it! He said, good, quit it! Now, you want to know a funny thing in Victorville? On a Saturday night, on the 16th anniversary, I quit it for 6 months. Cunning. Baffling. Powerful. Patient. This is a disease that can wait. And you know what this sick head said? If I hadn't had a drink for 6 months, I'm not an alcoholic. Because alcoholics can't stop. Now notice, and I'm saying this to you, because there's no AA. Never went to AA. Bishop didn't tell me to. Never went to see a therapist. Nothing. You know, we call it dry. You don't say I wasn't sober. In that 6 months, I wasn't sober. And you want to know something? It was the hardest 6 months in my life. And it was the loneliest 6 months. It's dry. No program, no fellowship, no steps, no sponsor, no identification, nowhere where I could go. 6 months being dry. And dry, you want to know about dry? Dry is like a dry leaf. Dry leaf, you put any pressure on this dry leaf and it'll snap. You know, like a dry twig, like a twig. Snap. Sometimes you meet people, even in the fellowship. And I'll tell you, they may have a number of years of not drinking, but they're dry. They snap! Things don't go their way. Pop! Snap! You can find fault with the speaker. I'm serious. You had a lady speaker last night who I met in the elevator. You've got Bobville tomorrow. You've got me tonight. Some of you have got different speakers in your cars, you know, that you listen to. Listen, every speaker is different. But you want to find fault with the speaker, you find fault with the speaker. You can find fault with the big book. You can find fault with the steps. You can find fault with the toilet roll. If you put enough effort into it, fingers go right through. If you want, you can find fault with anything on this planet. Dry people are like that. Oh, you may not be drinking, but if you haven't changed your attitude and your behavior, screaming and shouting at people, dry, snap, snap, snap. I went to Dallas. To Dallas to speak at a big meeting. I'm talking 3,000 people in Dallas. The guy who met me at the airport is from the committee. He's in a Cadillac. I sit in the car, I go with him. He's taking me to the hotel. The lights in Dallas, the lights change, you know, to stop, red. You know what he says? God, I hate it when they do that. I said, don't worry about it. They'll change back. Just wait. Now, you think about this. You get a lot of funny people. In this fellowship, you want to know gossip. Don't gossip about people. If you've got something to say to somebody, say it. It's very easy to know what sobriety life is. It's the opposite of what you are like as a drunk. This is not brain surgery. When I was a drunk, I was a gossip. When I was a drunk, I was lazy. When I was a drunk, I blamed other people. When I was a drunk, I was violent. When I was a drunk, I stole and cheated. I know what I did when I was a drunk. The opposite is sobriety. Now this fellowship has done very well. Hundreds of thousands of people, maybe many more, certainly many more, millions have passed through. But it behoves us to be united, not divided. It's a spiritual fellowship, it is not a church. Churches have killed themselves by dividing and separating. We must not go that way. There are no gurus of the big book. There are some people who read them and some people who interpret it. But you don't need sponsors who shame the people who they're sponsoring. You don't need dictators. I know it's a big book. People say it's a big book. It's a big book. But I've seen bigger books. And you know what I'm saying. I'll tell you about sobriety. You've learned to live and let live. There are many paths to God. Rigid people, that's the disease. I don't care how many years they've gone without drinking. That's the disease. If you have to be if you have to be strong at the expense of making other people look weak, that is the disease. It's not sobriety. So the bishop said to me, quit it, and I stopped for 6 months. And you, any of you here know about being dry? Any of you here know about being dry? Let me tell you something. It was the worst period of my life. That was when I was more likely to take my life and die. Because I didn't know what was going on. And why am I saying this? Because you know as well as I do, many people all over the place hear these tapes. Maybe somebody here tonight, you know you're dry. And you must deal with it. And the only way you can deal with it is by maybe getting a different sponsor. Maybe dealing with some other issues in your life. Because you're stuck. And the spiritual awakening is not to stay stuck. You know if you're a miserable, angry, selfish person. You know that. Also this business of cheating on people. Drunks cheat on people. Drunks cheat on their wives. Drunks cheat on their boyfriends and girlfriends. That's what drunks do. That is not the spiritual life. You don't want to be with somebody, you go and sit down and talk. Because that's a lie. This program is not about living lies. And that's probably why you're dry. And that's probably why you're not happy. Of course you're not happy. Because you're dishonorable to yourself and to those you love. You clean it up. Now for 6 months I was dry. 6 months. And if you want to know how I got into this program, how I got here, I'll tell you how I got here. I got a telephone call on a Wednesday. On a Wednesday. People think nothing happens on a Wednesday. People think that if you're going to relapse and have a mess, it's going to be on Thanksgiving, or it's going to be Christmas Eve, or it's going to be some of these 4th of July. Watch out for Wednesday. Follows Tuesday. Just an ordinary Wednesday. And the telephone. It was raining. A rainy Wednesday in England. And I was asked to go to a party. And I went to the party. And here's one of God's coincidences. You know what we say about coincidence? Coincidence is when God works a miracle anonymously. I go to this party, and who should be there, but somebody I met years ago. And she said to me, she says, Father Leo, oh, lovely to see you. She said, what are you drinking? And I said, 7-Up. She said, 7-Up? I said, 7-Up. She said, 7-Up! She says, you're a gin and tonic man. I said, I'm drinking 7-Up. I said, I'm fizzed out on 7-Up. She said, would you like a gin and tonic? I said, no. What about a large gin and tonic? I said, okay. Now that's how it happened. Now I'm just telling you how it happened. That quick. 6 months, 7-Up, all of a sudden, boom. Now don't forget, no program, no fellowship, no sponsor, no big book. I mean, I'm just waiting to be taken. Now here's another funny thing. You want to know a funny thing in Victorville? On a Saturday night? I didn't get drunk. I had the drink. Here's the funny thing. You talk about patience of this cunning, baffling and powerful disease. I didn't get drunk. And I went home after the drink. And when I wake up in the morning, where's my watch? My watch is gone. Now some of you are saying, what's the matter with him? What's the watch got to do with it? Just wait. I'm going to tell you. Just wait. Where's my watch? And then I remembered, I left the watch in the restroom, in the hotel, where the party was last night. One gin and tonic. Large. I go the next day, follow me. I go the next day to the barman. It's the same barman. He said, hello, Father Leo. I said, did you find a watch? He says, I found a watch in the toilet. I said, it's mine. He said, good. I said, can I have it? He said, yeah. Gave it to me. So now I've got my watch. That's why I'm there for the watch. And then he says, have one for the road on me. Same bar, same barman, could have been the same gin and tonic in the same glass. But when I took that drink, alcoholics, hear me. When I took that drink in the morning, 11:30, something in me was released. The lion was disturbed. If you're an alcoholic, you know. Last night didn't happen. You see, there's another thing. I wasn't a drunk who got drunk every night. Don't you start going around telling people alcoholics get drunk every night, because they don't. And not every alcoholic gets drinks first thing in the morning. And you don't have to drink spirits. There are as many different types of alcoholics as there are alcoholics in this room, believe me. Half the reason why so many people die of this disease is because they define it so narrow that very few people could ever qualify. Yeah. Richard Burton made movies. I mean, remembered lines. I was a notorious alcoholic. I mean, let's get real here. I took that drink, 11 o'clock in the morning, I had another one, paid for it, I had another one, now there's two, then I went to another bar, and another bar, and another bar, and another bar. You know, now I'm on a roll. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was as drunk as a skunk. I'm drunk now. I mean, real drunk. And I get in the car, drive the car, in the afternoon. This is the 3rd of July, 1977. My sober day is the 4th of July. I don't include this day. Because I'm drunk and I'm driving home, but I don't make it home. Maybe I do. Maybe I do. You follow me now? Because my car hit a tree and hit a lamppost, and the car shot up in the air. Shut up! Just went, you know. Two old ladies in a garden said, look, There goes Father Leo. That's how he travels now. Hey, up! Bang, stay up there. Came down, crash, bang. Oh, what a mess. Bleeding, hurt, sitting at the side of the road. And I had a moment. And I bet you any money you had a moment too. If you want to know what's so special about this talk tonight, the one part is the moment. If you don't listen to anything else. I'm sitting at the side of the road, the police are coming, the ambulance is there. Some of you know that feeling. Now I'm sitting at the side of the road and I'm bleeding and my car's turned over. I can taste the dirt. Do you know that? I can taste the dirt. And I stepped out of myself. And I saw me. And I saw me drunk. I'm telling you now. I saw me. I'm now looking at me and I don't like what I see. I'm drunk. I'm bleeding. I'm dying, that's what I am, I'm dying. Now I bet you any money, if you're here and you're sober, you had a moment. Now it may not have been a car crash, it may have been for you, you woke up in a jail. You know what? You woke up in a jail and you know you're not a criminal. For you, your moment may be, you've got a son and you've got a daughter. And you know what? Your daughter and your son, they don't want to know you. They don't want to know you. Maybe your moment is you don't know anybody. You're so lost, you don't know anybody. There's many moments. I've heard some moments where one man said to me his moment was when he looked at his wife first thing in the morning. She was in the kitchen, she was making him a cup of coffee. He looked at her face and her face was a mess, bruised. You did this. You. Now I'll tell you something. I hope you can remember your moment. Because what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now depends upon that moment. And if you can't remember the moment, I don't know how long you're going to stay. Because if you can't remember your moment, or you don't think you've had a moment, I don't know what you're doing here. Because the moment is the powerlessness. The moment is the unmanageability. You're at the crossroads, and if you don't change, then you lose it all. And I have been there. There's a moment. And all you need to know now is history. I came to AA, and when I came to AA, I saw people and I heard a message like tonight. People laughing, people hugging one another, people dealing with life. They dealt with life. People saying to me, because for 2 years in England, I lost my driving license. For 2 years. And AA meetings are few and far between in England in 1977. And AA people picked me up. And the days that they didn't pick me up in their car, I went on a bicycle in the rain and in the snow to my AA meeting that was the closest one. Was 7 miles to my house. You talk about going to any lengths. I hope you'd go to any lengths. And every time you go to any lengths for somebody else, you realize you've done it for yourself. Once this program becomes selfish, I promise you, it will go down the drain. When meetings stop giving, when meetings stop being places of love, when 12-step meetings are not based on the adventure of discovering what is this thing called sobriety, it's over. Nobody wants to go to a meeting to listen to old men just talk to each other. That's got to be ridiculous. Ladies and gentlemen, it was a powerful thing for me. I was loved in my 12-step meeting. And you know something? I've been at theological college, some of the best universities in England, and I've never heard this expression, find a God as you understand God. That was the key to my liberation. Not a God of the Pope, not a God of an archbishop, not a God of a priest, not a God of a body or of a group, but a God that makes sense to you. I was free. I was free. And ladies and gentlemen, what happened to me? I'll tell you what happened to me. I came after 4 years of sobriety to give some lectures in the United States, and I got invited to Long Beach, where I live now. I've lived in Long Beach for 20 years. I came to this country to be the spiritual advisor, the first spiritual advisor of a treatment center in Long Beach at Memorial Hospital Long Beach. And that's how I came to the United States. And some of you remember I gave lectures in Long Beach, I gave lectures in San Pedro with Dr. William Rader. My life has been transformed. All you need to know is tonight I do not have a pulpit anymore, not because I'm very close to the bishop. In fact, I am an advisor to the Episcopal Church National on drugs and alcohol, but I speak in any church. I will speak in a Catholic church, a Baptist church, an Episcopal church, religious science church. I will speak anywhere. Because it's my same message. There are many paths to God. I don't want to hear what you pray. I want to hear how you make your prayers come alive. I don't want you to escape in religion. I want you to live life. Because there's some kid out there who might be dependent upon the laughter in these rooms. Boring treatment and boring programs is no program. I promise you people will leave. And so we have a responsibility. And now, like many of you, I travel all over. I'm going to Vegas and I'm going on to help alcoholics in Chattanooga. I've been on Oprah Winfrey 3 times, when she was fat, when she was thin. Sally, Jesse, Raphael, Geraldo, that was a trip. Why? Written books on spirituality. Do recovery cruises. Why? Because I got sober. There is no other life. Because I got sober. I've never written a book before. I've never been on television before. I've never visited the United States. My life is based on my sobriety. And now, sometimes as many as 5,000 people. Based on and inspired by this program, 5,000 people visit my webpage every day to read the meditation. Spiritual awakening. Touching people's lives. Making an effort, when I have an obligation to be here. To drive. Yes, I drove. From Long Beach to here, but to get here early. Because you see, that's part of the responsibility. And I've never understood it. When speakers sometimes get up and say at the microphone, I don't know what I'm going to say. I always say, then sit down. Sit down. Let somebody get up who does know what they're going to say. I'm saying seriously to you. Because although it seems funny, it's not funny. Because at some level, I know how I got this program. When I walked through the door of an AA meeting from a hospital where I was sent, and I was at the first AA meeting, I can remember the people who greeted me, loved me, drove me home, and committed to bringing me to meetings because they knew for 2 years I'd lost my driving license. Service. Without service there is nothing. And so, this evening for me is coming to a close. I will be leaving with Ian to go to Las Vegas and speak tomorrow at a church in Las Vegas, but I hope I have a chance to shake you by the hand. I hope we can stay at some level in some kind of contact. It's been special. How do I end the talk to you tonight? So much laughter, so much connection. I'm going to recite to you the words. Some of you know the song, but I'm going to recite to you the words. It's the most beautiful, beautiful song. It's a country and western song. And if any of you ever doubt the fact that God can speak to you through country and western, don't doubt it. You've heard this song many times, but it's what God is saying to you each and every day, if you have the ears to hear. The words of the song are these. Welcome. Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess. Well, they still happen now and then. Welcome to my world. And leave your cares behind. Welcome to my world. It was built with you in mind. Knock, and the door will open. Seek, and you will find. Ask, and you will be given the key to this world of mine. And who's the key? You are. You always were. In this program, you will live again like you've never lived before. In this program, you will love again and start to love yourself like you've never loved before. And maybe the most important quality in this program, some of us will laugh. We'll laugh again like we've never laughed before. God bless you and all those you love. Thank you.
Hope you have enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a catalog of other AA and Al-Anon tapes and CDs, or to join our Tape of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.